Hello, everyone, and welcome in to CrushTheStreet.com. I got a new guest on the line with me today. We're going to be discussing cannabis with Dan Anglin, the CEO and the founder of Can America Brands. Dan Anglin, a U.S. Marine veteran, ex-Desert Storm, Desert Shield. Dan has been a high-profile leader in the marijuana industry, having owned and operated successful recreational dispensaries in Black Hawk, Colorado, and co-owned one of the largest marijuana companies in the world, operating in multiple states. He's an authority on the space, and we're really going to talk about, you know, Can America Brands today, and just really why right now is so timely to be looking at the cannabis space. So Dan, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me.
Thank you, Ken. I'm very happy to join you and your audience.
Dan, cannabis stocks would have seemed to have gone into, you know, got a little boost here. We have Constellation Brands with their announcement and you know, purchasing a share in Canopy Growth. That was very big news. Constellation's brand being the producer of Corona, very iconic. And then Coca-Cola sent the markets into hyperdrive, talking about a CBD drink. And, you know, really we're seeing cannabis going mainstream here, going from illegal to legal in the infrastructure that's being built out here. So I'd like to get your thoughts on some of these things, in your opinion, and obviously with your background.
Yeah, thank you. Well, you know, of course, because I've been doing this so long, my initial reaction is it's about time. But I'm actually very excited that all of these mainstream companies are doing this all at once, right? So, you know, Constellation Brands, Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, that those three companies really represent almost 100 brands in that beverage space, as well as snack spaces. You know, Pepsi-Cola is not just a beverage. It's also Doritos and other types of snacks. So I'm really excited to see these international brands looking at the cannabis space, and that it is more than what everybody's been talking about for the last decade, which was big pharma or big tobacco or big alcohol. I think there's room for anybody who's interested in cannabis from any of those backgrounds for a number of different opportunities in this space. But I'm really excited to see big brands that are into branding and bringing products to the masses looking at CBD. There's so much value in CBD, and of course, attention to the hemp plant helps normalize the cannabis plant.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing you bring up, and that's branding. You know, Coca-Cola has one of the most iconic brands. I mean, billions of dollars in value just for that brand. And, you know, Budweiser too. You know, in their space, they're absolutely huge. But because we're still very early in the cannabis space, really it's a wide open frontier with billions of dollars up for grabs when it comes to the opportunity to really establish yourself as a brand and own the market per se. So, you know, what are some of your thoughts on this?
So branding is something that we at Can America have really focused on. I think as we saw in our first market, Colorado, you know, just kind of a crowd of businesses. There is no cap to licenses, so anybody in Colorado who qualifies to get a license can, and hundreds of companies have been established in that state, which kind of crowded the marketplace and really spread out those dollars, right? That $1.5 billion of sales is now being, you know, spread out between so many different businesses with so many different identities, and we're really feeling quite confident that our direction that we took in 2015 to create a brand that was recognizable, something that created a visceral reaction. I mean, this is our this is our brand, and it has a lot to do with, you know, my time in the Marine Corps, but also we wanted to plug into that feeling of freedom and that feeling, that American feeling of, you know, the end of prohibition and sticking it to the man. We love doing that in America. And I think that is exactly what we've created. And now that we're looking at all of these international brands, very successful companies that have created, you know, that feeling of what their product is through their message, through telling their story, and through their iconography, that's exactly what we have tried to create in the cannabis space. And I think we've been fairly successful at it. We are a top-selling product in Colorado. We've just entered into the state of Nevada in the last 5 weeks. And we've just entered into the state of Maryland. When I say just entered, we've just begun distribution of our products, and we've been working on these three markets for a very long time. So we're very excited. Consumers respond well to branding. They understand it. Once they trust a brand that they've created a quality product and they're concerned about the consumer's experience, you know, that allows for opportunities for that brand to enter into other verticals in a marketplace and bring the consumers that came with them on their first product line with them on other products. And so it just makes sense. This is where cannabis is going. We honestly all thought that mergers, acquisitions would happen about a year ago, but it just, the timing wasn't right with the new Trump administration and the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, being so negative on cannabis. People really had to kind of take a wait and see approach of what was going to happen. And I think now that, you know, the Trump administration has demonstrated that they're not coming after legal, licensed, good players in the United States. And now with today's legalization in the country of Canada and all the reasonable regulations that are happening in each province, that it just is kind of building more momentum for brands to create opportunities for international corridors for their brands to enter into multiple marketplaces at once. And that's what we've done.
Yeah. So a couple of things I want to get into. First of all, do you think that the cannabis space is going to continue to be something that continues to be, you know, partisan, you know, a liberal issue, a conservative issue, and continue to divide the country? Or is this becoming a bridged topic where you don't necessarily have to be, you know, a fiscally liberal person to want to have cannabis, you know, vote for cannabis, you know, pro cannabis, or, you know, vice versa?
So that's a really good question. So prior to me entering into the industry, I was a conservative lobbyist for the state's Chamber of Commerce and also, you know, other business interests. I was basically a conservative business lobbyist prior to getting into cannabis. And it really isn't a partisan issue in places like Colorado because, and it's unique. It takes a little bit of explaining, right? So what both conservatives and liberals like is freedom. And so, you know, what this issue has become is freedom to choose your medicine or freedom to choose what adults can utilize for recreational purposes for intoxication. And so once it was framed that way, especially in Colorado, where Amendment 64 was placed into our constitution in the state of Colorado, our state constitution, it became difficult for Republicans and conservatives to be opposed to it because the people said they want it. They believe in that piece of paper, the constitution, whether it's the United States constitution or the state-based constitution. And so it took an adjustment, but it didn't take long because Americans like a good economy. It's, you know, one of the reasons why everyone's in the United States is talking about President Trump having, you know, a very good chance of winning a second term is because our economy is so good. And the thing about cannabis is it's really a localized economy, because while you could import cannabis from other countries, it's likely that it won't be of good quality, that it would degradate. And what would be the purpose of that? We have so many experts in the United States and in Canada for, you know, excellent cultivation and products. We've now been developing products for a decade, and we've got that nailed down. We've got extraction nailed down. So this is really a home economy for both, you know, everybody in North America that has allowed cannabis legalization. And it's not really a partisan issue anymore. What it becomes is representative of people who, you know, still value, say, 1950s style regulations, and are still either old enough to where, you know, their sense of morality is based around things that have been legal or illegal for, say, the last six decades, and aren't so concerned about the economy and jobs and where young people's careers and finance is going to go. But at the same time, it was at the very beginning kind of a bright line between, say, the religious community and, you know, young people. And now there's so many older demographics that are consuming cannabis that it's kind of breaking down those walls as well. You know, our demographic in edibles is primarily people over the age of 35, because they've got situations where they live in a condo or they have children in the home and they don't want to have smoke in the house. They don't want to have that kind of sign of consumption. They're utilizing cannabis or CBD to manage their pain, manage their inflammation, or to just enhance their life in a way that they choose to do so. So it's really funny that as time goes on, the demographic gets older in cannabis. And I think that that's tearing down all of those kind of predisposed notions from the politicians that their base is anti-cannabis because their base is older or their base is conservative. It really doesn't. It crosses all of those borders. In Canada, I'm not educated enough to know who the demographics are and what the politics were behind the enabling legislation. But my guess is it was almost the same, where the younger generation said it's time to stop the nonsense of putting people into jail. And then the opportunities for real business came about and the conversation grew from there. And now what you're finding, I'm seeing it firsthand in Ontario, it's so normalized, it's not really that big of an event, compared to, say, Colorado on January 1, where we had over 100,000 people out smoking pot on the lawn of the state capitol, right? Here, it's just kind of like, yep, this is the next step in Canada's progression towards more freedom for its citizens. And I think that's exactly what's happening in the United States, too. People went on tourism to Colorado and California and Nevada, and they came home and they said, why is it that I have to travel to go exercise the rights that are afforded to residents of those states, and even myself as a visitor, why can't I have this at home? And that's why this is happening so fast. Federal legalization is gonna take a new attorney general and probably another 2 years at the least, but more likely four. In the United States, yeah.
Yeah, you know, as someone put it to me this way, it was actually a legislator in the state of Washington. I was speaking with him. He was talking about how you have the bridging of, you know, traditionally liberal and traditionally conservatives, where you have, more right-wing voters in Eastern Washington who are the farmers or who are benefiting from growing the cannabis. And then you have, you know, a lot of the dispensaries in the cities, which tend to be more on the liberal side, which again, you know, are bridging the gap between both sides of the aisle wanting this and wanting this to be legal. So following up on that, the name of the company is Can America. I mean,
that's correct.
This is America here, Can America. And we talked about how there is not full legalization yet here in the US. I know the banking industry is still difficult to move along and to operate and to fully operate as a real business with cannabis. But yeah, maybe you can talk to us a little bit more about, you know, the name of the company, why you doubled down on Can America, and, you know, why you see the upside going forward here in the US.
Sure. So we actually started our company as Americana. And what we found about a year and a half in is that because we couldn't federally trademark it, that there were people who were utilizing similar name, not similar iconography, but a similar name, Americana, in multiple places. So, you know, we really thought hard because we loved the identity and we loved the logo and we loved all our branding about what we could do. And after doing numerous searches, we found that Can America had not yet been registered or used by anybody. So we immediately registered it in the state of Colorado, and we have begun the process for registering it federally in both the United States and Canada, as well as all our iconography and our slogans, brand of the free, home of the crave, be free, taste the freedom. You know, we really, we believe in the plant, we believe in the industry, we believe in the movement, and we think that that resonates with consumers, and that's one of the reasons why they like us. I don't remember the rest of your question. What was the second part of your question?
Well, just talking about, you know, why you are excited about the U.S. and, you know, why are you so bullish on the opportunities that there are here in the U.S.
Sure.
To double down that way?
So, you know, again, we thought that Can America was representative of all of North America and potentially South America as well. And that because cannabis legalization started here in North America, that the world might also respond very well to our branding, our expertise, our history. With my, you know, time from 1988 to 1992 in the United States Marine Corps, I just wanted to be able to bring that feeling of patriotism and the end of prohibition to everyone. And we're excited about the United States because it's growing. It's a growing market. There's emerging marketplaces every year, right? So Michigan is going to go recreational this year. Oklahoma is another opportunity. Florida, Ohio will likely try again. I mean, there's just so many markets. And it's why what we created in Can America, in order to be listed on the CSE, which our listing is C-A-N-A, so it couldn't be more perfect, right, in the response for folks looking at the exchange for cannabis. They immediately see it. It's, you know, similar to our name and branding. But I think what we bring is the ability for people who want to get into the business, the opportunity to bring that brand to their marketplace through our licensing arrangement in the business. And what we license is our intellectual property. So our know-how, our expertise, our equipment, our branding, our packaging, and our products. We provide services and we provide parts of the supply chain. We cannot provide cannabis at this time because you can't take it across state lines, right? So we're out of Colorado, so we can't help our partners in Nevada with cannabis. So that's what they have to do, is they have to bring the cannabis to this relationship, but everything else is, you know, provided by us, including ongoing marketing and expertise in, you know, boosting sales across their marketplace. So, you know, we're doing a number of things at once. We're bringing the company, we've brought the company public, and we're bringing the brand to every market that's available. I can't wait to, you know, talk to folks about Canada and, you know, product development next year as more products are allowable in the nation of Canada. But we have so many emerging markets where people have a license, they have an operation, maybe they want to learn how to extract, or maybe they're extracting now, but they want into, you know, specific verticals, whether that's vaporization through disposable pens or other types of vaporization or concentrates. We really started as a concentrate manufacturing company. So wax, shatter, resins, diamonds, sauce, all these different terms that we bring that expertise, and then of course edibles, where we really made our mark. And our business model is really large scale, high volume, the ability to enter the market, whether you're a first entry into the market or not, as a competitor, because of the amount of volume that we've been able to perfect in manufacturing per day. And you're only really limited by the supply of cannabis in the marketplace. So some new emerging marketplaces run out of cannabis very quickly. There isn't enough cultivators, there isn't enough producers, and some are oversaturated, like the state of Oregon has more cannabis than they'll ever need. And so that's actually a good market for us, because we can help them, you know, with that amount of cannabis, turn that into products that people want, especially on the edibles side. So it's nice with all of our experience that we've really created a company that can help people in these emerging marketplaces stake their claim in the industry and become a large scale manufacturer and distributor.
So, Dan, if you could, you talked about how exciting all of the developments are and how everything is moving forward. But if you would, is there any more indication that the audience can have for, you know, where the company is now and where you expect to be a year, two, three, four, 5 years down the road?
Yeah. So right now, our model for expansion of licensing into markets is, you know, at least one new market every quarter. I think with the company now being public and, you know, more exposure to our business model globally, that it is likely that that will be a much higher growth rate than that. We, of course, want to execute appropriately with the infrastructure so that every one of our licensees can enjoy the success, you know, that we've built, and that we can provide them with all of the attention of marketing and training and, you know, analysis of the market, so that the products that are being introduced by those partners are the right products for that market. But I mean, overall, our goal and our belief is that we will be in every legalized marketplace that allows an oil-based product, because that's really what we do. We're experts at turning the raw material into an oil and turning that oil into a distillate. And then, you know, from that distillate, creating a product that people want and that fits in the regulatory marketplace. For example, Maryland doesn't have edibles. And we specifically wanted to enter into the Maryland marketplace to prove that the brand itself, which is well known for edibles in the state of Colorado and now Nevada, can do more than edibles. But as a person who helps shape policy, my goal is to help Maryland come to the real conclusion that consumers need their edibles, they want their edibles, and if the state wants to enjoy the kind of tax revenues that places with edibles it enjoys, they should allow edibles. And I hope to help Canada figure that out too. We're really looking forward to opportunities to explain to policymakers the things that we have done in the state of Colorado and the rules that we've created and the reaction to those rules and the results of what that kind of policy has created in our society down in the United States. It's not the doom and gloom that everyone predicted. You know, things like teen use are actually down in Colorado, probably because now that it's your mom and dad and your grandma and grandpa's drug of choice, it's not as cool as it used to be for kids. But I don't know that for sure. All we know is that teen use is down, and it actually could be more about the education of cannabis and what it does to developing brains. And probably more likely the hard work we've done on regulating to ensure that these things are not marketed to kids, all cannabis products, and ensure that they're packaged correctly so that if left out, a child couldn't open it, you know, put it in child-resistant packaging, and then education to the consumers about how to store it properly in your home so that, you know, people don't mistake it for something that they think is not cannabis. So all of these things our company and myself have experience in, and we want to help every regulator, every policymaker, every nation, every state, every province, you know, come to the realization that by allowing consumers access to these products that they want, doesn't change their society. And for us, that's pretty much everything you can make with cannabis or CBD oil.
Very well said. Okay, so final question here, maybe some speculation, but you know, we don't know what we don't know, right? You know, I just learned about this weed beer. You know, this is something that people are starting to think about. And my question is now that the lid is coming off of this illegal industry and going legal, how is recreation going to look? How do you expect bars to look? You know, are there going to be Starbucks-like experiences, you know, surrounded by cannabis in the next 5 to 10 years? You know, what is going to be different, you know, that wasn't around now that might be around 5 and 10 years from now? And I'm sure there are going to be things that we haven't even wrapped our minds around.
This is a really good question. And I'll start with some science. You know, 5 years ago, we thought there was about 44 cannabinoids in the cannabis plant. And now, 5 years later, with the science developing every minute, we know there's over 135, right? The exact number of how many different properties and molecules are in this plant have yet to be determined. And why I start with that is that means that what we can do with the plant has not yet reached its limit. So, you know, what kind of products are coming? I hope a lot more things, right? And as far as your scenario of will there be a Starbucks type experience? I hope so. You know, weed beer, so without stepping on anybody's development, I think it's better for, you know, alcohol to be alcohol and cannabis to be cannabis. There are ways that you can make alcohol smell and taste like cannabis utilizing terpene introductions. And I think that's neat, right? There's some vodka companies that have done that. But, you know, I just, my personal reaction, having been a cannabis user for most of my life and all of my adult life, except when I was in the military, you know, was that the alcohol and cannabis are not a good mix. They're two different types of experiences. And, you know, you don't want to mix antidepressants with alcohol. And I don't think you want to mix antidepressants with cannabis either, right? So I think some things have their own categories. And but, you know, I could be wrong. There could be science out there where we can create a beer that doesn't give you, you know, that kind of bad experience by mixing the two together. But as it stands right now, I'm more of a proponent of one or the other. Don't mix. Start low, go slow. These are all slogans that I'm the founder of the Colorado Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, which was a association of manufacturers, cultivators, retailers, all working, you know, in this association to create sensible public policy that is safe for consumers and also to prevent prohibitionists from somehow backdoor eliminating products or banning certain types of things. And so we've always kind of looked at the idea that tobacco is tobacco, cannabis is cannabis, pharmaceutical drugs are pharmaceutical drugs, and alcohol is alcohol, and bifurcating all of those different areas. So, you know, perhaps somebody can create a weed beer that is more than just terpenes. So the smell and taste of cannabis in a beer that doesn't provide those kind of effects that we're concerned about. But I certainly am a proponent of public consumption spaces where people can go and purchase a product, have a place to consume it, enjoy it, consume it responsibly, and then, you know, hop in an Uber and go to a concert or go to a club or go to the library or whatever it is they would like to do when they consume. And I'm very encouraged by Toronto's, I think the decision comes in later today, to allow for consumption wherever tobacco is consumed. So basically outside this office building I'm in is a tobacco consumption area, and the proposal is that cannabis could be consumed in that same space. I think that's great. There isn't a negative connotation to the consumption of cannabis versus, say, drinking wine. I very much look forward to business meetings with people outside the industry where I could potentially order myself an edible or order myself a pre-rolled joint while they order themselves a gin and tonic. And we imbibe in the things that we enjoy and go ahead and have a business meeting. I think this is where this is headed, is the normalization of it. The difference is it's taken 70 years since the prohibition, give or take, of alcohol for this to be so normalized in our society. And I think those of us who've been involved in the cannabis industry for 10 years, it may feel like 70 years, but it's not. And so, you know, it's just going to take a while and a lot of education and some marketing, of the truths of cannabis to get this to the point where it's part of the fabric of society. Right now, alcohol is part of the Super Bowl. It's part of the World Series. It's part of, you know, virtually every sporting event that you can think of. Having a beer is part of that. And I look forward to that type of normalization with cannabis consumption and whatever products those may be when that happens.
Well, the incentive to build out the industry is absolutely there. And, you know, with the removal of the criminalization, the opportunities are there, and congratulations for being in front of this trend. And it's an honor to have you here at Crush the Street introducing us to your company. And I believe this is a very timely discussion. And I want to remind people, if you want more information on the company, you can visit the work that we wrote up on the company, crushthestreet.com/Canna, C-A-N-A. But Dan, please close us out here. If people want to learn more about the company, where could they go? Can they reach out to you or anybody at the company to learn more details in ways that they can to be investors and partner with you on this endeavor?
Perfect. Thank you for that question. So we have two different websites. We've got our product website, which is really a consumer-facing site, which is canamericaco.com. And what that is that's a description of all of our products, where we're located. But then we also have a company website, which is canamericabrands.com with an S. And that's where people can really get information. Most of your viewers and listeners would be more interested in canamericabrands.com. That's where we've got information about the team, information about the company, information about the listing, and our email address for more information, I believe, is info@canamericabrands.com. And, we've got a team of folks who will be responding to those types of questions and connecting people with questions to the right folks. So, you know, if you're someone who's got a cannabis license or thinking about getting a cannabis license in your state or country, and you'd like more information on how to work with us, they would pass that on to myself or my business partner, Frank. And then if you have more questions about the opportunities with our public listing, CANA, they would pass that on to one of our investor relations team, who would then manage, you know, your questions that you might have. So again, it's canamericabrands.com, or if you want to just learn more about the products, canamericaco.com.
Well, thank you, Dan, for coming on Crush the Street. And of course, thank you to everyone tuning in, watching this podcast here. Greatly appreciate it. Dan, thanks for coming on Crush the Street.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Ken. And we really appreciate the opportunity to talk to your viewers about our company. So thank you.